Hello and welcome to Resolve FM. I'm Cassius Chiani.
And I'm Matt Sandrini.
And we're here to talk to you today about the best decisions we've ever made. And this was a really fun topic because we found it from, it was one of your listeners wrote into you, right,
yeah.
Mr. Sandrini? And it's asked a very heavy question for an Easter weekend in a wine bar at 11 a.m. So despite, you know, clearly being alcoholics,
and it was a third bottle of wine.
Third bottle of wine, really early on. And we found that question really intriguing.
It's not true. We don't drink.
We found that question really intriguing.
Yeah.
And I guess from there, it'd be good to start with, you know, what was the best decision you've ever made?
The best decision I've ever made, as you'll find out in the episode, is to actually fail a year in school. Have to repeat it and really go against the grain.
Unbelievable.
What was yours?
Well, I mean, it kind of stems from a similar place. I mean, if you look at, you know, failing and then turning that into success, for me it was the same sort of thing. I had a full-time job which I hated, but I had no choice but to stick with.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, from sticking with it, I managed to meet someone who essentially, you know, sent me on the trajectory I am now, got me out of there, back to kind of like working on my own things, on projects, running my own businesses. But very counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Much like essentially me deciding to take the same crappy course of action over and over again. That was, you know, me deciding to fail the year as well.
Yeah. So this episode is about taking action and the cost of getting to the next level. The cost of success. We mentioned that.
Absolutely.
So let's get straight into it.
Yes. So Matt, what was that question that popped into your inbox earlier today?
So we were in a wine bar, as people will find out.
Absolutely, 11 a.m.
And just going through my emails, and there was an interesting question from a reader saying, what's the best decision you've have taken in your life? Right, that was quite
a broad question. Heavy for an Easter weekend.
That's true. But I thought it was quite interesting because it's, We have so many decisions in life, but we rarely look back and think about which one was the best one, right? So that kind of made me think, and the first one that came to mind is actually quite a controversial decision.
Controversial?
Yeah, because, so this is like me being, I was a teenager, don't know how old, it doesn't matter, I was an old teenager anyway, and I remember it was the start of my school year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the car with my mum. She was driving. And I remember I decided I was going to fail that year. So at the time, I was like in the Italian school system where you can, if you don't do well enough, you fail. You have to repeat it. You literally go to a different class and like, you do it again. So I remember I just decided this year I'm going to fail. And I did. I repeated.
How badly did you fail?
Oh, it was awful. It was like, I remember chemistry, I had something like the lowest score you can get. And most of the other things, I was like, as a student, I was very effective most of the time. Like I would go for what's the minimum I can, that would allow me to pass, right? So I would go for that. And because I've always been quite a curious person and an attentive student, but at the same time, I didn't quite see how school was helping me out in real life. That was my strategy. It was like, go for, you know, what's going to make you pass the test and whatever is interesting to you. So for example, I really like history, philosophy, art. So I was really into that, but I would skip anything that was just for an excellent score. It was like, what do I want to retain for myself? What do I want to retain for that? But on that particular year, I felt that I had so many things to sort out in my personal life, from like some of the people I hung out with, just some personal stuff, internal mindset. I wasn't in a happy place. And I just realized,
how old were you?
Priority. Probably 17.
That's deep for a 17-year-old.
Yeah. I just thought, school's not a priority this year. I'm going to sort everything else out. Mm-hmm. And then school will be a byproduct of that.
Very nice.
And so I remember being in the car with my mum. I didn't say anything. But I remember I decided this year I'm going to fail. And a few months later, when I actually did fail, and they had to tell my parents. That wasn't, it wasn't easy, but I felt good about it because I knew the bigger picture. No, it's one of those things that, especially at the time when you're like, you know, you, when you're a teenager, you have no, when you're a teenager, you have no experience or past success. You can say, okay, this is my reputation. You know, you can trust me. I didn't, you know, I was 17. I didn't have a history. So I couldn't say this is a tough decision, but there will be a big picture. So I didn't say anything. So everyone around me were like, oh shit, what, you know, what's happened, whatever.
Sure, your parents felt really good though, that the biggest problem a 17-year-old had to worry about was essentially getting their life back on track. I mean, I'm not sure about how many 17-year-olds you hung out with, but for me, the common theme was pregnancy and drugs. So you're already doing exponentially better than, yeah, you know, 80% of 17-year-olds. I mean, ask, if you were to go to a high school now or go to a sixth form, could you imagine going up to someone and say, hi, what are your plans for the future? No one has an answer.
Yeah.
So to say you're going to fail because you have bigger plans, like, you know, that's not a 17-year-old thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And at that time, no one really thought beyond a month or even a year, right? So in that case, I was like, yeah, this is not the road I want to go down. So yeah, you're right. That was, I don't know where it comes from. I don't know what that, because once you make a decision like that and you say, I'm going to go for the big picture and take a hit right now, because that's what it was, right? It's like, I'm going to sacrifice the short term because the long term is more important. Most people do the opposite, right? We are taught to do the opposite. And, but the first, if you do it once, and then you see the results and you go like, I'm going to do that again. That's my philosophy. That's fine. But I don't know where it came from the first time. You know, I was like, that's what I did. So that was, I'd say, well, definitely one of the best decisions I've ever made in my life. And it wasn't, again, it wasn't easy, but I just felt very resolved, you know, and I felt this is the plan and I'm going to make it happen. And it's true. What you said, that like, my parents, initially, they were really worried about the manifestation was like me not doing well in school. And like in their universe, they were taught that like school, university, you know, your education in general is, university down the line, I mean, is really good for you, right? So they were thinking that like, wow, his plan is actually going in the bin. But as soon as they saw that, once that happened, I was really proactive in, mm-hmm, you know, looking for a new place, looking for a new school. I actually wanted tougher challenges. I wasn't looking for something, an easier way to pass. I was like, no, I want an interesting way to pass. And as soon as that showed, I guess that brought back a lot of that support. Yeah.
So that's quite controversial, using, yeah, failure as a way to succeed. I mean, it's a classic entrepreneur's dilemma. You know, people do things, they fail, they learn, they, yeah, grow. But the interesting thing is that in this case, you didn't have to fail. So you set yourself up, you essentially set, mm-hmm, out for failure,
mm-hmm,
in order to, you know, accomplish bigger, greater goals. And like you said, they were a bit tricky to understand. And perhaps some other people didn't see the same vision that you saw, at least to begin with.
Yeah.
So what would you say was the biggest kind of result from that? Because you said it's such a great decision you chose to fail. You sorted out, you know, all of these things of friends, like family, but perhaps, you know, partners, whatever. But what really came from that? What really came from that failure? Was it looking for that, you know, like additional challenge? Or was it just the headspace? Like, what was the real motivation behind it? Because as a teenager, you know, long-term thinking is great, but you're still hedonistic, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And even right now, we get caught up in that yeah, hedonism. Like, you know, hey, there's chocolate cake there. Should we eat it? Should we not eat it? Yeah. Like, that kind of thing. So where was the real trigger, the real motivation that came and said, I need to do this?
I think initially it was the headspace. Go like, you know, I don't want something external to take my focus. Even having to think, oh, will I pass the test or not? I didn't want to think about that, because I wanted all my energy and focus to go towards my personal challenge. At the same time, doing that taught me that I was creating my own rules, because the rules that had, you know, been given to me were like, you go to this school, you pass the test, and then you go to the next class, you go to the next level, whatever that is. But I hadn't decided any of that. So that is probably the first time. And that's why I think it's such a big deal, because it was the first time in my life that I went, you know what, I'm going to go against the grain, and I'm going to create my own path. And in this case, it was against what was set out for me. It wasn't just different, it was literally in the opposite direction, same vector, opposite direction. And I think maybe I didn't see that at the time, but I just needed to question, because I thought what I've done so far hasn't given me the results that I want. So I know what doesn't work. I don't know what works, but I know what doesn't work. So I guess the headspace, trying other things. And then by doing that, I showed myself that, you know what, you can carve your own path. It's a possibility. Yeah.
I like that. So almost the idea was to rebel, but to rebel in a good way. Failure is usually rebellion anyway, as a teenager, right? But you rebelled in a way that had positive outcomes. It wasn't like, hey, this is like, you know, huge amounts of narcissism and self-love. It was like, nope, I'm going to do this because it's beneficial for my future. Not because, hey, I need to put a big middle finger up to the man sort of thing.
No, it's more like, I know what's not working for me. And therefore, I'd want to reject that and try something else. If that is the opposite and it might not work, that's fine. But at least I know another thing that doesn't work and then I can move on.
I like that. Yeah. So one thing I really take away from that story is the idea that you fought the game, or essentially the man, you know, the big enemy of most people, the people who are, you know, sat in offices or ultimately are working as freelancers and they have a client, the man, right?
Yeah.
The person who's like essentially being like, I am blocking you from your goals, from your dreams, the resistance, right? So what advice would you give to someone right now who's facing the, you know, equivalent of the man? Like, you know, you've given a few really interesting pieces of advice there, but how would you beat the man? Because you haven't got a lot at stake as a 17-year-old. Roof over your head, like, everything's going relatively well.
Yeah.
You know, the biggest thing you have to worry about is friends or partners or what university you get into if you're going down that path. But some people have so much more at stake. So what advice would you have, you know, to essentially fight the man if you're, say, 20, any older than 23 years old?
Yeah. I think that the next level has a cost, right? So if you're in a situation where you have clients that have got you to this level, or maybe you've got a job that got you to this level, or whatever it is, what got you from A to B won't get you from B to C, right? So you've got to let go of what has worked so far, or maybe what hasn't worked so far. But either way, if you're looking for something else, you have to let go. So there will be a moment where the graph of growth will go down before it can go up, shoot up again. And so just realizing that growth isn't this thing that you just go up and the graph is a straight line. It's just, you know, it goes up and then you will have to switch gears and change again. And when you switch gears, you know, we have a mutual friend, Frank, who talks about this. When you switch gears, the engine goes down, slows down a little bit. And then, you know, you let go of the clutch, go like next gear, go faster, more efficient. But for a moment, you slow down and things don't go as well. And I think there is a cost to going to that next level. And it's why many people stay stuck. I see this in business. Many people get like 10 clients that are okay. But the thing is, they outgrow those clients. And they're like, okay, this is no longer fun. I could get paid. I could get paid more money. I could do work that is more fun. But in order to do that, I would have to go from 10 clients to 6. Mm-hmm. So that I can find a better client that maybe will pay me as much as 4 clients, right? But it's difficult to do that because, you have to let go of that certainty. I think that's the most difficult part. It's not actually letting go of the practical thing. It's to let go of that certainty in your mind. And when it's external, when you rely on the man, whatever that is, maybe it's, you know, the plan for your school years, or maybe mm-hmm. it's the plan for your business or your career or whatever it is. Maybe it's a book that you read and that has worked so far. You follow that plan. When the plan is external, well, it's great because that certainty comes from something external. You don't have to question it. You don't have to bring any results for you to believe in that certainty because it comes from someone else. And so, again, it's difficult to say, you know what, I'm going to question it, take that responsibility back on myself and do something else. But again, it's part of that cost of getting to the next level.
I like that. Everyone has a plan until they get hit, right?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Did you have a beard when you were 17?
Did I have a beard? No, I didn't have a beard. I think I started to grow a moustache. Not grow a moustache, but be able to grow a moustache when I was like 18 or 19. And obviously, I never did. But I just mean the first bit of hair.
So all the sage-like wisdom, obviously.
Exactly. That's what
was preceded by the beard. I like that.
Yeah, the beard is just a manifestation of it. What about you, Cass? What's your best decision you've ever made?
Oh, I mean, it's kind of controversial like yours as well. So
love it.
I originally moved from Cambridge to Manchester because I was the kind of douchey freelancer that made a lot of mistakes. So I had a lot of fun clients in Cambridge that were asking me to do, you know, at the time, marketing work and a bit of design, not huge amounts. But because I was a student and money was coming in, I didn't really take the work that seriously. So it was like, hey, there was loads of fun and there wasn't so much kind of hard work, yeah, which meant I missed deadlines. I was late on things and ultimately I burnt a lot of bridges. And so for me, it felt like I needed a fresh start. So I moved to Manchester. I had a really nice friend who paid for the first month of rent, first month of the deposit as well, which was fantastic. I owe this guy loads. And he looked after me while I essentially got a job. And I still needed some kind of reference to get into the flat as well. So I went for an interview for this job, and I've only ever had two full-time jobs, and this was one of them. And I hadn't got the job at this point, but I needed to give the, you know, essentially the letting agency a reference to show that I had employment.
Right.
So I just gave him the name of these people I'd literally just had an interview with the day before. I was like, close enough. If I don't get the job when I get the job, maybe they'll let me have it. I'll have no choice, right? So I got the job, right? Really, really, really boring kind of startup job. Like, you know, the kind of job where the startup is growing, but they hire student talent because they want the cost to be low, not so much because they think, oh, hey, students have loads of bubbling talent, but we want low cost. And ultimately, you know, we believe we can like gently mold and nurture you, which in short means we're going to micromanage you loads and make you wish you weren't here. And so that job was painful, really painful. I remember waking up every single day and being like, why am I here? But obviously I was in a lot of debt. I owed my friends some money and I was like, I don't really have a lot of choice. There's a lot I can do on the outside. You know, I was going to like networking events, attempting to build a network, attempting to, you know, find a way back into freelance.
Yeah.
But there was no way I was going to do that quickly, purely because stress coupled with time, coupled with just general headspace and getting by, you know, I was living off rice and peas for the best part of, you know, at least 3 to 6 months. I was the leanest I've ever been. It was fantastic. So I decided I'm going to be really persistent. I was like, I have to stick with this because I have no choice. And more than that, I believe there's going to be a way out, but I believe that by kind of hammering my head against the wall a little bit, I'm going to get there. Now, what I found was very quickly, say 6 months down the line, that there was literally no way out unless I kind of crafted that. And it started to, even when the money problems started to get less bad, like that kind of fire was building up inside of me. Like, I've got to leave. I can't believe I'm still here. This is terrible. I wake up every morning, like, why am I doing this? Like, I was looking for all sorts of, you know, get out of jail free cards. Like, how can I get out? And you know, no capital. Like, right, you know, I was less than zero, right? Substantially less than zero. Yeah. And I remember it was, the company decided to refresh their website, right? Refresh the website. And I remember this really vividly because they hired an external contractor. And the external contractor came in and, you know, he sat next to me because there's a space essentially next to my desk, right? He sat next to me, was hacking around the website, doing some UI, UX design, etc. And obviously building the website as well. And I remember that, you know, we had a conversation, you know, just like life stuff, you know, hey, should we hang out? Hey, should we do this? We became quite good friends in the end. And, you know, he's still a very close friend now. But he was really, really inspiring in the sense of, I was like, oh, dude, I want to be like you. I want to be like you again. And I want to do it well. And I want to get out of this. And I want to do all of these things. I was like, I'll tell him, you know, all my dreams and goals and stuff. And he'd just be like, why don't you do it? And I'd be like, well, I'm, you know, I'm kind of stuck. And he'd say, no, you're really talented. You've got all this stuff. You've got all this energy, right? All of this kind of stuff that you can give back to the world. And it was in that moment that all of the kind of like months of being like broken and beaten down and in debt started to disappear, because there was this external person who really didn't know much about me, didn't know anything about my past or anything about my, you know, present really that much, yeah, or even my future. But he could just see that inside of me, there is enough energy, passion and commitment to do something with my life that he encouraged me. And so it was only a few short weeks later after that I put everything into play to leave. And I finally left and kind of like, you know, got back on my own feet. And obviously, as I got back on my own feet, I had more skin in the game. I was happier. The debt started to disappear. I started to like amass and build, meet friends, run businesses. But I really owe it to, you know, that guy for turning around and saying and believing in me.
Yeah.
So for me, you know, one of the best things that's ever happened in terms of like defining moments was being persistent with something in order to meet the right people to facilitate me getting out of a terrible situation. So counterintuitively, like right now, if you said to me, hey Cass, you've done something for 6 months, it's not working, keep doing it, I wouldn't do it. because I'd measure things, I'd understand hypotheses, I'd kind of like, you know, dig. I wouldn't be stubborn, right? Yeah. And that's what I was before. I was just stubborn and also a bit weak. But through that, it showed that, you know, there was a light at the end of the tunnel. I couldn't see it, but it happened. And it was almost like that persistence, that, you know, that resilience to keep going. Yeah, it wasn't ideal. And for a lot of people, I think that the first spark won't be. But just being able to embody that attitude of, I will keep going. I won't give in. I will be persistent. It made such a big difference. And so for me, that is, you know, again, counterintuitively, one of the best decisions I ever made was to stick at that awful startup job that was beating me down and killing me. And I wouldn't suggest that a lot of people do it. But if you have that kind of resilience and you want something, yeah, hey, law of attraction, you never know. It might just happen.
Two things I take away from that story is, one, how you turn that pain that was holding you back into fuel to do the next thing. You know, that pain was like, I'm broken, I'm broke, I can't do this anymore, right? And then once you saw the light at the end of the tunnel, that was actually, wow, I have to get out of this, right? It fueled you instead of holding you back. And the other thing, the other takeaway for me is how very often we can see the, you know, we see the behind the scenes of our own story. We know too much about us. And very often we don't even get it right. And we know so much that it can be paralyzing. We can just see the forest, you know, we just see the tree and not the forest. But other people don't have that. And so they can actually give us the big picture, which is very often more accurate than what we can see, because we have so much data, absolutely, but it's still not enough, right? What would you say is, I would say, an actionable mindset that you learned from that and that we can share from your story?
So it's a similar mindset to what you were talking about in yours, like the idea that, you know, you've made a decision, you have to stick with it, and you know it's one that's going to pay off in the long run. Mm. It's kind of like you rely on yourself. And not so much in the sense of, hey, you don't have friends, you don't have incredible people that you can kind of like, you know, essentially like cheer you on. Yes. You've got your squad, right? But what was really important was, you know, you at the end of the day, the only one that can push the button, move the needle, like, hey, no one's going to drag you out of bed, you get out of bed. And it's that kind of like mindset and that attitude, because, hey, like this guy, fantastic, he really gave me motivation. But that motivation was just the spark. I had to keep the fire going. I had to keep the fire burning. I had to keep doing something with it. And so while that was like passionate for me, it was still like there was a lot of effort. So I had to rely on myself for a little bit. And it sounds like a similar situation for you when you were talking about, you know, the decisions you were making at school, because you had to rely on yourself in the sense of, well, actually, I'm going to fail at these things and I'm not going to put time and energy into it, but I'm going to put my energy into all of these things that will, you know, move the needle long term. And allow you to essentially, like you say, I trust in my decisions and I'm going to move forward with them. And I guess that's kind of hard for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And even now it's hard for me, because as the stakes get higher, you always question, am I making the right decisions? I mean, I'm not sure about you, but how do you feel when it comes to, you know, relying on yourself as the stakes get higher?
Something, yeah, it is more difficult as the stakes get higher. But I guess at the same time, I have that, I have enough wins and experience to show myself I can do it. Again, at 17, everyone else could look back on my, I had no history, but it was the same for me. I had no history for myself. So I couldn't look back and say, look, this is the 10th time you listen to your own inner voice. And whether it works or not, you'll figure it out anyway. Now I can do that. So even if the decision is more difficult or there's more at stake, I've got all that history of going like, I know I can rely on myself. But when you do it the first time, you don't know. So that makes it more difficult, even though the stakes may be lower. Something that makes it a bit easier for me is, I think we're naturally wired to follow what the majority,
absolutely,
or the majority of people around us do, right? And so it's very difficult to say, no, I'm going to go my own way. Because it's very often the first time you do it. So again, you don't know whether it's going to work out or not. But I just ask myself, do they have the results that I want? And if the answer is no, then I know that their recipe is not going to work. And so even if I get a wrong recipe, at least it's another wrong recipe. I know two things that don't work now. I can try a third one. But if I stick to that and I already know it's not working, it's not going to give me the results that I want because those people don't have them, then I'm just sticking to certainty, even though I know that answer is not going to help me, right? So that kind of helps me, even though the stakes are a bit higher. Yeah. How do you feel about that decision as you get more experience, but also, again, as you have more more legacy, but also more at stake?
So the fun thing is with stake in legacy is that as you learn and you kind of move forwards and amass knowledge and learn how to use it, you realize really quickly that you actually don't know anything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a big takeaway for me. You know, I read roughly 2 books a week at the moment.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, you get all this information, what can you do with it? And the reality is it's like, I'm getting information because there's so many unknowns and so many uncertainties. The idea is that at least I can be as prepared as possible. But the truth is you can never really, really be prepared. You can have experiences, you can have legacy knowledge, you can go back to past successes and past failures and attempt to pick out the bits that you can learn from them. But every single challenge is so new and so interesting and intuitive that when it comes to it, all you can do is do what you feel is best at that time and then learn from that. And that builds you a new knowledge base. But it's one of those things where serial entrepreneurs do well, not because they've got huge amounts of past experience of how to run businesses and a track record of successes. As much as they learn not to be paralyzed by inaction.
Yeah.
Right? Taking action, doing something is absolutely better than nothing. I'm literally doing something. So if you're in a situation where you're stuck or you're in pain or you need to do something, literally just do just that. Something.
Yeah.
And if you don't do anything, then that's the biggest sort of pain point. And so for me, you know, as the stakes get higher and I realize that, you know, I have all of this experience behind me, the real thing it teaches is, one, I don't know anything. Two, I'm okay with that and I'm learning. And three, I need to take action no matter what. Mm. And if I don't take action, that's the first really big problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that you're quite a big fan of a few thought leaders in space who talk about action and kind of like getting things done. So for me, I think that we share that. That's something that we have in common, that action is the number one thing that you can do. It doesn't matter what your results say. Yeah. It's like if you don't take action, you're screwed, right?
I think that when you show up, and again, you take action, try to figure it out. And like you were saying, the information that you have can help, but alone it's not gonna help you. Because the more you know, the more you realize you don't.
Absolutely.
Right? So when you show up, what happens is that at least you know that you will show up, you will take action. So you have that confidence in yourself. You have the self-confidence in a way, knowing that whatever happens, I can count on myself, I can count on my actions. And I feel that that's what makes it, even though the challenge may be more difficult as we go up, you know, each level, at the same time, that history, that's what I was talking about. I know that I've shown up in the past, so I know I can count on myself and figure it out. And that is a great way to build self-confidence. If you feel that, oh, I'm not sure if I can do that, I'm not sure if I can figure it out, well, start showing up in your life, whatever it is. Maybe it's fitness, going to the gym, say, I'm going to go twice a week. That's fine. If you keep doing that, then you'll know you can rely on the promises you give to yourself. And you'll figure it out. Everything else is secondary to that. Because even if you have all the information that you need, which is impossible, if you can't rely on yourself, that information is useless.
Okay. Yeah. To me, this all makes a lot of sense. I suppose that from all the stories we've told, the real key takeaways are action more than anything else. You know, we both told very controversial stories, one about failing, another about kind of like, you know, stubbornly being persistent and hitting your head against the wall when you kind of know that things might not get better unless you do something. But that in itself is doing something. And so it looks as if there was one thing that, you know, all of the best decisions in life come from action.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what kind of action you're taking, as long as you're doing something. And obviously, there's a point in time where you should actually look at what you're doing is working, how to measure that, how to manage it, do all the smart stuff. But there's a very big difference between being smart and taking action and doing nothing at all.
Mm.
And so starting with any action first and then kind of, you know, improving how you're taking said action.
Yeah.
Sounds like it's the best way to go. Where all the best decisions come from.
Yeah. Take action so you can adjust.
Agreed.
Really like that.
So what would you say to someone who's right now screaming at their phone or, you know, being like, Matt, I take action all the time, but I'm not getting results. What would you be your advice to someone who says, look, I'm showing up every day. I'm taking on clients. I'm at work. I'm still in debt. There's still a lot of things against me. My energy levels are low. Like, what would you say to these people? How would you help them kind of, you know, essentially climb that ladder, raise the stakes?
Mm-hmm. the first thing that comes to mind is keep taking action, right? So it's not the level, even do more if you can. But the thing is, what we were saying earlier is, even when you don't take your own decisions, in a way, you're still taking action. You're still making a decision not to question things. You know, if you stay in a job that you hate, it's your decision to not change it. So that means you're still taking action. It's just the wrong thing. So really look at what has worked. It doesn't mean that you try something for a day and then you move on. It just means that if you worked with a certain kind of client for a year, 3 months, 2 years, whatever it is, you don't like it, you're not getting the results that you want, well, you got to tweak something and do something differently. So maybe look at other people that are getting the results that you want. That's where new information comes in handy, actually, is you when you try to get to the next level, explore, get a lot of information from books, other people, mm-hmm. you know, just research. And then once you get the answer, take action. You commit to that, take action. So because you want to understand whether that works or not. We have so much information right now that it's easy to get lost. Try one tactic for a day, and before you can get any feedback, move on to something quote unquote better. So you explore, look for what works based on what results other people are getting. Commit to one, see whether it works for you or not. Do it all over again. Whether it works or not, you know, get to the next level, do it again. And if it doesn't work, then move on. But you've got to take action for a while. So again, it's like, if you commit to something that doesn't work, that's not good. But if you also don't commit to stuff that works, that's not good either, right?
I completely agree with that. Oh, absolutely. I mean, in design, there's a principle that a lot of people follow, which is still like an artist.
Yes.
And so when we look at this, you know, taking action is, most people say they want to reinvent the wheel, change the game. Like, that's all well and good. And it's not, I'm not saying don't do it. But when you know something works, start there and then build on it. You know, if you've seen other people generate success around you, you know, we're not talking huge. You don't have to look at the, you know, millionaires, billionaires in this world. Like, start from, you know, what the next level is to you. And you've seen someone say, you know, get a promotion or move from full-time to freelance or, you know, find that dream client or start that dream business. Ask them how they did it.
Yeah.
You know, replicate those steps. There's a good chance that if you start from those sort of first principles of stealing like an artist, you can at least then build on it and iterate on it in a way which is good for you, which is beneficial. Like, of course, like we're not saying copy, I'm saying steal. Take good ideas, make them yours, and then build on them. It's the same thing here. It's like, if you want to take good action, find out where you can steal the good action from in the first place, you know? That's what learning is.
Yeah.
All learning is stealing. When I'm reading a book, I'm stealing someone else's knowledge and I'm just finding a way to use it for me. Yeah, stealing sounds bad, but...
it's a remix.
A remix, that's it, you know? Or ultimately a cover. Mm. Look at how many incredible covers there are in the world and people are like, oh, these songs are fantastic. Some of them are written 50 years ago. No one questions why Drake covered this song or anything else. They say, I love this song. And that's it, you know? I'm happy to create the remix or, yeah, create a cover as long as it works for me. And the people around me go, hey, Cass, that's fantastic for you. I say, hey, that's all good.
There's only 7 notes, like my mum was. So it's got to be, you know, the ingredients are limited. And everything is a remix or a cover in a way. You just make your own, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Everything's been done before.
Yeah. So to make it easier for our listeners to take action, I think that it'd be great if you think of the best decision you've ever taken. It doesn't matter. It could be very small. It could be, I went to the gym for the first time, right? And why don't you let us know on social media? You can find us at Cassius Chiani.
Yes.
And at Matt Sandrini.
Yes. But don't worry, they'll be in the comments because Absolutely. They're not the easiest to spell names on the planet.
That's true. That's
but equally,
true.
Comment below on the video or, you know, wherever you're finding this podcast, whether that's iTunes, Stitcher, or anything in between.
So let us know your best decision.
The best decision you've best ever decision. Made, right? Yes. And obviously for us, it's quite counterintuitive because there are decisions which were made with, you know, maybe not the best intentions originally, like, you know, turning the negatives into the positives.
Mm.
That's what life is, right?
Mm.
Ups and downs.
Yeah. And we'll meet you in the next episode.
We'll see you the next episode of Resolve FM.
Thanks for spending this time with us. Speak soon.